Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here. We're in studio today in Denver, and this podcast has been a long time coming. And in the pre-interviews, we were talking through, and my buddy Mike Kirshner, him and I started a leads group many moons ago, where we've spent many time together talking about all the different things of business and moving parts around procurement and supply channel and our day-to-day, where I run a window and door company and he runs a lighting company. And it's just been really fun talking through how we can move this thing forward. But a few months ago, I said, you know what, Mike, I need to actually have you on the podcast so I can really understand where you're coming from, where you are today, and where you're going. Because we're always talking about the vision. And without traction, vision is a hallucination, right? And I think we've struggled with that. So the main message today is that how does lighting and design and execution work today? And what are the perspectives for the future? And how is this going to benefit you is that Mike, who leads ILC, is changing the way our industry designs and procures lighting by leveraging design expertise, technology, and common sense, delivering a more efficient, streamlined process. They provide fantastic design, always on budget. And I'm going to call him on that because I've never heard of a project that way and with unparalleled transparency. And so my perspective, Mike, is that let's get your expert view on lighting and how it fits into supply chain for this streamlined design that our whole big, hairy, audacious goal is to actually make system-built construction not just be a bunch of unicorns, right? And so we're super excited to learn about your company, ILC Studios. As the founder and president and overseeing all the sales and marketing for your company, Mike, welcome to the studio. We're excited to have you. Let's start off by, what's your favorite beverage?
All right. Well, this is going to be probably a unique one to your podcast.
All right.
But I actually love fancy, vacation-y, fruity cocktails. And why it is when I get to go out, leave my three kids at home with my wife, I want to feel like I'm in like a resort in Mexico. I get a nice, delicious cocktail.
I just came off vacation with a family and my buddies. He's like, Miami Vice. That's what he had.
Exactly, right?
And the first place we went was like the best one. And he's always like, the rest of them were just not quite as good, right? What is a favorite place you've traveled?
I kind of got two. One, last year I took my whole family to Costa Rica for a month. That was amazing, living kind of this beach surfer lifestyle while I still worked. And then it was just a great experience for my little kids. And then the other one is when I was single, I lived in Thailand for a few months filming a movie, traveling through the jungles with camera equipment. And that was a pretty crazy experience.
Wow. Give us one story from that.
We shot a scene in the red light district of Bangkok with an elephant with a boy riding it down it with strippers and hookers and everything all around us while we're kind of shooting the scene. It was interesting.
That's quite a picture. So what do you like to do outside of construction and the silos that you and I have always been talking about? And I'm honored to have you here to share it with the Art of Construction Tribe that we passionately call the Art of Construction.
So I've got three little kids, and so that takes up a lot of my time. But when I'm not doing something with them, big sports fan, love watching my Boston sports teams playing sports. And then also just whatever I can do to relax, to get away from what you and I have as very, very busy lives.
Awesome. Cool. Well, honored to have you. What's your story that led you to founding ILC Studios?
So it was actually started as a cinematographer in the movie industry. Figured out I did not like being in that industry. It wasn't a good fit for me for many reasons and was trying to figure out my career. And someone told me, well, you know how to light movie sets and TV sets. And so why don't you go light buildings? And so got a certificate at an architecture school in lighting design and then started doing lighting design and then figured out I don't like sitting at a computer. And then I got into distribution and worked at a sales rep for a while, kind of all these different experiences just kind of led me to this place where I just felt like every time I was part of a project, the process was so broken and no one got what they wanted. And it was so hard to get designs accomplished and it just felt like it could be easier. And that's really what led to ILC and just thinking, how can we integrate the design and the the purchasing and the budgeting and done not just into one company, but one process where design is actually done better because the designers control the price and what's being purchased.
So Innovative Lighting Consultants, I want to put you on the spot here to say you and I have had so many great visionary conversations, and I'll just raise my hand and say, I'm really excited for this answer to hear because you have so many great perspectives, and you and I are the guys that when we talk and when we used to have our leads group, we'd have 10 ideas before breakfast, and it's trying to figure out, okay, how do we disseminate that down into the idea we both think something we should talk about? We've always struggled with that. So I want to start by saying, what is your goal with ILC Studios?
So I think we start with lighting, right? And hopefully we're building an example of how you don't have to have it where you are purchasing and budgeting from a different company. The designers can have the control and they can have no bias. They can be great designers, create great design, and at the same time have these parameters about budget, about lead times, about warranties, all this stuff that actually goes into the design being put into a building. And I think that's something when I was a designer that I felt like was forgotten by my side, that sometimes we weren't thinking about everything else that goes into construction. We were just thinking about how do we make this look really good. And in the end, the developer, any building owner wants their building to look really good, but they got to make money for their investors. And I think that was one thing that really kind of changed my thought process and brought that to ILC was that's designed with the developer's goals in mind. That's designed with he wants or she wants great design, but they also have to make returns for their investors. They can't just spend anything. And so that was, I think, the big thing is to think about that. How can that happen across the industry? I mean, how different is lighting from plumbing or mechanical or low voltage?
Yeah, windows.
Windows, right?
That's the part behind the scenes is day-to-day. That's what I love and was really excited about this conversation is we both are involved in supply channel, if you will, all day, every day, but we're passionate about blending analog and digital of like stuff that may actually work and like hit what's wrong. I just finished a book called Buy and Build about acquisition entrepreneurship. And you really have to spend that 10,000 hours talking and knowing what is wrong with an industry and really get into it like you have with lighting and I have with windows to then actually look outward and kind of bridge the gap. What do you say is wrong about the way lighting is done currently that you really want to change?
So one thing you said there is interesting is you have to have a certain amount of hours to figure out what's wrong. It's something I've always thought about that there's like this inflection point of people's careers. Yep. That if they've been around too long, they don't want to change because they're probably doing well, right? But if they've been around
the dichotomy, and also what is long enough? Like the 10,000 hours thing of like when Peyton Manning came here and won the Super Bowl, and that was the only blip on the radar since I've been around here. Yep. I came right after Elway, and it's these paradigm shifts, right? But that's a podcast for another day when you and I are on the golf course with all of our buddies and bringing in these people who are making these paradigm shifts. Like really, you know, what is, I want to niche in on lighting of like really talk about what is wrong and what do you want to change with that?
So I'm probably getting in trouble with this one, but I think first thing is I think our industry has really forgotten who pays us, and it's real estate developers, right? If they're not building the building, we're not designing it. We're not buying lights for it. And I think if you really think about that, then you think about what is that real estate developer sitting there doing? Well, one thing, they don't want to deal with all the bullshit. Right. They just want to get good design and be on budget and not have to deal with it. And then I think the next thing is this industry over time, on purpose or not, subconscious or not or conscious, has become so convoluted and opaque. And it's done that in a way so that no one can really fix it very easily. And so that no one has any idea what anything costs or what they're really getting. And everyone just kind of has accepted that because it's so complex that it's really hard to break, right? It's like healthcare or something.
Right. And the specialty parts within. And that's what I think makes you and I kind of a cool hybrid in within the Heart of Construction as master facilitators, where you and I are kind of leading this meetup that we're having in June of like bringing your perspectives of spending time in lighting and windows, but we're not coming there to try to sell lights or windows. We're coming to say, let's talk about how we can make this better, right? So can you talk about the design process that you've created for lighting? And you already kind of alluded to, it's like, once you started going down this path, it's like, this is not a lighting thing. This is like a backbone thing of like who this, the supply channel goes down the path for things that can be complex, but there's still just kind of a, how does the developer get past this as fast as they can? Lighting, plumbing, fixtures, yeah. Windows, all that stuff. Is all this stuff is just line items of the big thing.
So I think one of the big things is we put the power and the power to choose where the money goes back into the designer's hands, right? Into our own designers. So I think that's one of the big things, because in the end, the designers, the architects, interior designers, they're the ones that have the vision of these buildings. But then once you get to this place where now everyone else is involved, salespeople have their own goals, contractors have their own goals. Now all of that.
You mean they changed that?
No.
Yeah, that's the part we just hit it head on. Like, there's who is the true decision maker on lighting?
Yeah, and like what it is that you get to that point, and now what did you do for the last 2 years if people are tearing it apart, right? And so what's the point of that? And what's the point for the developer to pay you your fee as a designer if your design is going to get torn apart and 40% of it's going to be used? And so that's the whole thing here is we say, we can do this from the beginning. We can get a fully designed, fully on budget, fully coordinated set of drawings. And that thing goes gets built at that point, right? It's not just a concept of design.
Yeah, the design is actually used 100%. And yep. Lighting is one of those things that's fully integrated. And it's this transfer of like how you use it and what fixtures and where you get it and where you buy it from. These handoffs, it's mechanical, electrical, and plumbing are those three like things. And windows is another one of like most people who are ordering the windows are not making the windows. Same with kind of lighting and that. And it's complicated of all the testing and stuff that goes into that. So let's tie this into how you match this up with procurement to the design.
So in the end, what is procurement, right? What does a distributor do? They basically project manage the logistics of the job. I mean, really what it comes down to is why do you want a new entity involved in something as complex as construction, right? You've been designing for 2 years, you know, every inch of that building, and now you're going to hand this off to some distributor who doesn't know anything and has to bid the job in 2 weeks. It just makes no sense. The procurement side of it, the logistics management side, there are so many people that do that. But if you're just getting involved after everything's been done, you don't know all that kind of common knowledge that everyone else knows. And now you're trying to project manage and everything. So that's what we also bring, is that our team from day one, distribution side or design side, knows what's going on.
Yeah. But challenging a little bit, if like you can only know so much about creating a good digital model, and you can only know so much about actually managing a warehouse and SKUs and the right, how to stack and store and move and back order and systems and all that stuff. It's putting that all together and digitizing it. So when it comes to digitizing the AECO industry, what is being done wrong and what is being done right when it comes to the contact companies?
So I think what's being done right now of the last probably 5 years is we are actually incorporating like modern day technology, AI, machine learning. I think the problem so far in my head is it's only being done at the top, right? It's only being done on the massing of the building, how real estate developers are kind of writing pro formas like test fit, you know, and that kind of stuff. But it's not also being done with a combination of design and pricing. I think if you look at all the generative design that's out there, it's design. And there's almost no pricing or budgeting connected to it. So you're giving these developers or architects or GCs these kind of computer-generated designs, but they mean nothing if they don't know how much it costs. So now they have to go bid it out and figure out what it costs. So I think what's being done great is that we are getting a place where generative design and these kind of tools are being incorporated into the industry, but not with the full breadth of what the industry needs, right? And you look at like the software in how software developers work, right? They've written like more code to check their code, right? That's like, think about how our industry works. We're still getting paper checks from probably 90% of our clients sent in the mail. That's insane, right? You can send money through, you can send through anything that you want. There's a million programs out there and we're still getting paper checks.
Yeah. Yep, that for sure. Yeah. What about the way of investment capital? So you and I have been talking a lot about, like, locally, there's this big project I'm working on and trying to bring others into the fold and trying to figure out, there's in Colorado with offsite construction all in the news. There's so much happening right now about investment capital into construction tech. What are your thoughts on that whole process where all this money is going into all this stuff? That how is it actually being executed?
So I think the biggest thing about investment capital that I am frustrated with is that it's all going towards software in our industry, right? Because the VC world are the ones focusing on construction because it's a higher risk world, right? Private equity, these other ones, they want to buy more already kind of successful companies. In the VC, that's high growth, high risk. But they're putting it all in the software. We're trying to put robots into situations where you have people that are working the same they were working in 1975. Like, we're going 20, 30 years out with what we're investing in instead of, like, checks. Why isn't anyone fixing how we all get paid in the industry, right? How are draws and all this stuff not digitally, taken, tracked, and passed out to all the subs and suppliers? It's crazy that we're going to robots painting ceilings before we even get to how people get paid in this industry. And so I think that's where I struggle, is that the money, there is so much inefficiency in day-to-day processes that won't even have the ability to incorporate software because the process is so broken. And they need to start putting money into process-driven companies that are actually totally new process, right?
Yeah, we have an upcoming summit, the Housing Innovative Alliance at University of Denver we're involved in. I love their platform because the word innovation, you better have a lot of people coming together to figure out, like, how we're doing it today to make that paradigm shift move forward versus just throw money at this brand new thing that happened. So yeah, there's definitely a check to that. And you also talked earlier about generative design. I think a lot of people, they've heard of that, but they don't even really know what that means when you start unpacking that, you know. And I met you at the same time as Bill Allen, where you and I and him, and he's been on the podcast around Evolve Labs, and he talks about the data drop chasm and generative design of, like, he's put a career into, like, helping educate and doing really cool stuff around that. What are your thoughts when it comes to generative design?
I think the only thing stopping us right now with generative design is that we need to start thinking about it as, when we go to design buildings, that principal of that company that has 25 years experience, what we need is we need to take what's in their head and put it into algorithms, right? We need those people that have all this experience and know how to build buildings and design, lighting designers. It is really hard for me to talk to even lighting designers in my company to say, I think 50% of what you do could be done by a robot, could be done by a computer, right? Because there's ego there. There's, like, hey, I'm a creative designer. But actually, the benefit is you go be creative way more 80% of the time, right? Let me take all that shit work off your plate and have AI do it. And so that's where, like, absolutely our company is going towards it. We're already starting to build out concepts because there's no reason that you're designing a multifamily corridor over and over and over. There's only so many ways that you've ever seen lighting done as a multifamily corridor.
100%. That's, you mentioned TestFit. When I was interviewing Clifton on the podcast, he talks about how he spent a year seeing a cubicle matching out parking spaces to match up. And he's like, that's where there's got to be a better way to do this than this, how much time you spent shifting those different things to get all the parameters to make sense. And that's where generative design makes so much sense, so that you can put way more effort into what makes that special instead of how many parking spaces match up to that.
And TestFit, not to get off subject, but what an amazing piece of software. But imagine if you can bring in cost and local costs, right? Imagine if you can bring this data that actually is, I'm moving around these structures, how many buildings I have on site, and now I know actually how much dollar per square foot in that that local region it should cost.
Yeah, and the key word you're saying is local, and that's a hard thing of the whole ESG of the governance of how do you make this stuff work, right? And we have some upcoming podcasts around different places in the world where BIM is a standard, where in the US, it's a whole different, like people are just starting to understand what that is if you haven't been in big multifamily, right? So what do you think are some of the biggest obstacles to change in construction?
I mean, I think there's really kind of the big one is ego. I think that our industry has a huge amount of ego. And I think that from, you know, Starkitects is the name for big architects, right? And the thing is about an industry with a lot of people with a lot of ego is that they're not going to say, you know what? Maybe I haven't been doing it that well for 30 years, even though I'm super successful. And so I think there's all this software out there, right? We know we can do all this crazy stuff with ChatGPT, right? But we're not going to get there until the egos say, you know what, maybe they can do 30% of my job better than me, right? And that's the move that has to happen.
Yeah, do you foresee design and purchasing eventually being integrated in every part of a construction project? And if so, how could that happen when you're casting this big net out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think our model and how we're doing it at ILC, I think vertical integration is for sure the future. It doesn't make sense not to have more vertical integration. Look at all the big developers, the Gray Stars, the Mill Creeks, the Avalon Bays. They're all vertically integrated. They're all GCs also. It just makes sense. And so I think with that, the only thing that's going to stop kind of design and purchasing to become even more integrated is really just transparency. The kind of old guard of the industry, they have to be okay with pricing becoming more transparent, which it is going to no matter what with the internet, right? And I think it's still being fought until there's more transparency on how much things cost. We can't make design and procurement really integrate.
Yeah, well said. But to have transparency, you can't be comparing apples to oranges, right? And that's this part that I think when we're looking at this ChatGPT, how fast it's searching the whole internet, it's impossible to understand getting three bids and understanding the apples and oranges within those bids. And then people are forced to make bad decisions because you don't have enough time to make good decisions.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole key to vertical integration, because if you can make those decisions during design when you're doing that for a year or two years.
100%. So we always talk about beginning with the end in mind. And as a guy that spent, you know, I got 26 years now of supplying windows and doors. The longer I play the great game of that, the longer I'm seeing like I need to be more part of this vertically integrated piece instead of just take a bunch of kit of parts that are one-off every time to go to this other one-off thing. And then it becomes not fun because people are pointing the finger of like, we're over budget, over time, all these things that make things very stressful, right? And then it's not fun anymore.
Yeah, and just this came up today in a meeting. It was called submittal fatigue. And basically that you get to the point during submittals where nothing's gotten accomplished. And the developer, I was talking to the developer, and they just are like, I'm fatigued. We got to build this $200 million project. I don't care about this $200,000 anymore. Like, we got to keep moving. And I think that only happens. And they look at the design and say, we did this for 2 years. Why are we still fighting over this, right? So they look at the design then and say, why didn't we know this then?
Yeah. And I just like pause there and be like, how, what a bummer that is. And that's where multifamily is. Like, I sit and when a lot of the multifamily people I talk to are like, yeah, it's a dog eat dog and it's just the cheapest and it's a hard place to be. But most of them are making really good money too. And now it's all of a sudden the interest rates and this, it's like, it's going to be interesting how you have to be more transparent on all parts of it, right? Of like, who's really making the money? And where are the dollars and cents moving in the time around that? Like, you spend so much time on unpaid consulting and supply channel right now that's wasted.
Yep. And I think the thing that we talk to developers a lot about is like lighting, for example, it's only like 1% of the budget when it comes to a multifamily building. But all of them will say it's like 10% of their brain power because it's such a horrible process. And so if you can take that off their plate, that's how kind of all these other mechanical plumbing distributors, what they need to do, because what it comes down to is these developers have to think about thousand things, roofing and snow melt. They can't think of any of them for that long. At some point, they just say, make a decision, go.
Yeah. And then they get sued and they go back and dealing with that to where I was in. You talk about, you know, submittal fatigue. It's about just getting burnt out of getting burnt out fatigue. Like I was in a big meeting the other day and it was like,
absolutely,
I'm sick of supplying. I don't even want to supply windows to multifamily anymore. And he's like, I'm done. I don't want to install any windows anymore. And I'm like, dude, you and I are big players in the market. And listen to what we both just said.
Yeah.
Like who's going to actually, like the decision makers are going to, who's really the decision makers? We're going to have to be better partners on this thing going forward and be open up this thing to be, we all got to make it work.
And part of it is the process improvement piece, right? Software is great, but software, great software, machine learning, all of this stuff doesn't work in totally broken processes.
Right. And the data drop chasm, it's the handoff
yeah.
that are so broken. Like you give me a shitty set of plans, how am I supposed to give you a perfect proposal?
And why
proposal?
Are we even talking about plans at this point instead of models, right? And so it's, and it's just in a multifamily where margins are just getting squeezed because of interest rates and construction costs, right? They're looking for efficiencies and companies have to figure out how to totally change the process to create that efficiency and still make a profit.
Well, we could talk all day on that. And if anybody's inspired by this, this is the conversation Mike and I and the group are having in the Art of Construction Master Facilitators group. And we'd love to come back and talk more about this to say, maybe we're broken and maybe the supply channel, because you don't know what you don't know. And you can sure be jaded by what you think, you know, you spend this time down this vein and we have to all work each other to be open and honest to say, how do we break through this ceiling to get it to the next level? And then look down the line, right? And I've asked this question 300 plus times, and I'm super excited to ask it to you, Mike. What is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
So I've got two. I think one is, I think that this no-code, low-code technology needs to come to the construction industry, but in a more focused way. We've built a whole enterprise software on a no-code, low-code platform where basically you don't need real software developers, but you can write little bits of code to automate things. And we've connected that to the BIM model.
Well, and ChatGPT, you can do code now in that too. That's changing the game and refigure the code. Like all that stuff is, when I talk to my developer friends, they're like, yeah, that's a big game changer of like, how much time is spent behind the scenes to make this stuff work.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking into that more and how we can incorporate it into with our designers asking questions. But I think the other thing was bringing up an old episode of yours that I listened to the other day before getting ready for this was the tired of all those buzzwords.
Yeah.
Episode, really, it was amazing. Like, that guy is hilarious. Yeah. But I think the thing that came out of that I thought about was, we need to have all the money that's being pumped into prop tech and contact needs to be pumped in not for big sexy things like we're creating factories on the moon or something that they're going to invest in, or robots that are doing this thing. They have so much inefficiencies they can make so much money on that are simple. And they could go do it. And I think that's the next big thing.
And that's really what we're focusing on in June. Like, how do we execute paradigm shifts on actual projects, right? And bring people into the room of can talk about that. And I think Colorado is a great melting pot for that because there's a lot of different things looking at happening here. And we're kind of right in the middle, right outside of DIA. So we have a lot of stuff that we're excited about. But to niche in, what is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
I think growing business in this industry is really about relationships. And that is the one thing that you're not going to be able to automate in this industry. The developers of the world, the GCs, all those guys, they trust. They have to trust you as a human, right? And I think for everyone who's kind of listening, I think that's how we've built it up, is we've just kind of built this company that is just, you trust us to do what's right for you. And I think that's the way to really get people to buy into what you do.
I absolutely love that. Mike, thanks for being a trusted partner of the Art of Construction. Thanks for coming in.
This is awesome.
All right, crush it out there, tribe.